Hello and welcome to the Slate Political Gabfest.
The president ran on the notion that the Impoundment Control Act is unconstitutional. I agree with that.
January 30th, 2025, the Fork in the Road edition. I'm David Plotz of CityCast in Washington, D.C., where there's just a pall over the city after this horrific plane crash last night. From the New York Times Magazine and Yale University Law School, Emily Bazelon. How are you doing, Emily?
I'm okay. Good to see you guys.
And from New York City, John Dickerson, co-anchor of the CBS Evening News, just finishing up his first week in that job. Congratulations, John.
Thank you. It's good to see you guys.
Do you want to tell listeners, like, 10 seconds on how it's going?
It's going well. I mean, it's going well. People are getting what we're trying to do with the show. Not everyone. Some people want something else, which is fine for them. But it's going well, and it's great to work with a great group of people who are working super hard.
I will say, as somebody who doesn't regularly watch Evening News, and I obviously watched some of John this week, and this has got a lot of substance. If you like John Dickerson, if you like the kind of the meat on the bone of John Dickerson, you'll enjoy this, because this is not quick and trashy. This is like, there's real depth in what they're doing. So congratulations.
You couldn't have said anything that would have made me happier. So that's great to hear.
This week on the Gabfest, President Trump's sweeping efforts to stop federal spending, his freeze and unfreeze of federal grants and loans. We'll talk about the coming fight over impoundment. What is it? Is it legal? Can it be stopped? Then the sudden arrival of the cheap Chinese AI model DeepSeek. How will it upend tech and tech policy? Then we'll talk to my personal hero, Jonathan Rauch, about his new book exploring how Christianity has become a threat to American democracy. Plus, of course, I'll have cocktail chatter.
In late August 1992, Randy Weaver and his family were refusing to come down from the remote Idaho mountaintop where they lived.
Weaver, a fugitive on a federal firearms charge, has been holed up in a cabin near Naples for more than a year.
The government thought Randy Weaver was a dangerous, possibly violent extremist. Randy and his wife, Vicky, thought the government was an agent of Satan on Earth. When it was all over, three people were dead, and the government had spent millions of dollars to catch one man. We'll find out why the siege at Ruby Ridge unfolded the way it did, and think about some of the questions it raises. What should we do about white supremacists? Why has the story of Ruby Ridge become an enduring myth for the far right? And whose fault was it, anyway? Subscribe to Standoff, What Happened at Ruby Ridge, in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
How much do you know about the scandal that got Bill Clinton impeached?
Monica Lewinsky is under the microscope, Bill Clinton is under siege, and the White House is trying to contain the damage.
Maybe you know the basics. That Clinton's presidency came to a screeching halt amid a storm of accusations involving sex, power, and partisan warfare.
If it turns out to be true, it could be the end of Clinton's presidency.
Congress is rushing to overthrow the commander-in-chief.
What determines who we believe and whose side we take in a political fight?
Trip and secretly tape Monica Lewinsky.
Go down to Radio Shack and buy a tape recorder and plug it into your phone.
What does it mean to abuse one's power?
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
It is absolutely staggering that the fate of the most powerful man on the planet is in the hands of a completely unknown 23-year-old intern.
Subscribe to Slow Burn and Apple Podcasts.
I'm sure this is true for you, that an hour is like a day in the Trump universe. A day is like a month, or a day is like a week, maybe. And a week is like a year. The Trumpian onslaught on the federal government went in all kinds of directions this week. The White House, bent on bending the government to its will, quickly and brutally acted so fast. Either yesterday or maybe it was a month ago, Elon Musk sent out an email that encouraged all – or it wasn't Elon Musk. It just clearly came from the desk of Elon Musk.
It was the same subject line as his firing or forced out email to all of Twitter.
Yes, that sent out an email saying to all federal employees that you can resign now and kind of get paid for 8 months, but maybe you still have to work anyway. Then the Trump Department of Justice fired perhaps illegally career prosecutors who worked on Jack Smith's investigation. Trump also fired, again, perhaps illegally, as many as 17 independent inspectors general. And most alarmingly, Trump's OMB froze all federal grants and loans for a moment to all billions and billions and billions of dollars that go to all kinds of things that the government supports indirectly and directly, and then suddenly rolled that back. So it is chaos. It is so much more radical and so much quicker than, you know, I think almost anyone expected. I imagine for the Trump folks, it is very quite thrilling. We could probably talk for hours about any of these topics, but let's focus on this freeze and unfreeze in federal payments. So, John, who was affected by this in the moments that it was in place, and how were they affected?
Can I add a question? Why did it fall apart so quickly?
I think it fell apart so quickly because there was chaos, pressure from the Hill, from both parties, who were getting flooded with calls from people trying to just figure out what the orders were here. I mean, first of all, broad sweeping memo goes out Monday night, unleashes massive confusion. First kind of clarity was that Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security direct payments were not going to be affected. There was a little side drama when a Medicaid portal went down for, I think it was Illinois, I'm not sure it was beyond that, which was a separate problem, but was conflated in this because it happened simultaneously. And therefore, there was some thought that this order had frozen access to some of Medicaid. That was a side drama, but it was at one point mixed into the main drama about this overall freeze. And that matters because it gives you some sense of the just overall chaos. So then there was just such a backlash and so much confusion about it that they rescinded the freeze. But then the White House press secretary said, no, the freeze isn't rescinded. What I believe she meant is that the underlying executive order, the whole theory of the freeze was OMB is going to pause all of this to make sure that it aligns with the president's priorities. We'll get into the Impoundment Act of 1974. That is not one of the reasons for which you can pause federal executive branch spending. There are reasons you can pause it, but to align with the president's priorities is not one of the reasons. And the reason this is all important is that in a shared powered system, it's important to have input from the rest of the country on the spending decisions and priorities that a government makes on behalf of its people. And that is informed by all the representatives in the legislature, and they make these decisions. So it shouldn't be the fact that the entire country's fortunes rest in the will of one man. That's not the way the system was designed to be equitable. And so when you hijack the decisions of the legislature, that's what was essentially happening here.
Had this gone into effect for more than 24 hours or even in the 24 hours, who is affected by this? Like when you freeze payments of grants and loans, what doesn't happen?
I mean, it was everything. It was like...
Yeah, the list went on forever.
Yeah, I mean, money to the police to help, you know, fight drug crime, and nonprofits that serve people who do all kinds of things, and lots of other programs. Like, it was just... The specifics were so broad. You know, it included relief from the storm disasters in North Carolina and other states. I mean, that was why the response was so overwhelming. And... You know, I think there was such utter disregard for the panic that this kind of order sows and just the anxiety of uncertainty that it creates. I mean, I was really struck by that you're just like catching all these people off guard, making everyone scramble. And clearly, if you cared about that, you would never do something like this. At the same time, the backlash was swift and sure and huge, and it made a huge impact. I mean, they rescinded the order. So there was something about a kind of return to political reality here that, you know, I think was also noteworthy.
The Times listed all of the federal programs that were affected by this order. The budget office actually named them, and the Times came, the list is 2,600 of them. So that gives you some sense of the massive overwhelming scope of this. Some would include Meals on Wheels, housing assistance programs for low-income families, Head Start, Native American tribal nation, money that goes to tribal nations, medical research, Pell Grants. And it wasn't everybody, because the list was so huge, everybody just assumed they were on the list. And they were basically treated when people were confused. The White House press secretary told our Nancy Cordes, who said, like, well, how do people figure out what's going on? And they said, well, we talked to the incoming OMB director. Russell Vogt said, well, give out his number and people can call him, which is the kind of answer you give when you have no interest in actually helping people who are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. And you do have to ask yourself, is the uncertainty and the fear the point? Or was it really a side product, an accidental, incidental, inadvertent side product of they, you know, they're just really trying to go after woke and DEI programs, and they just went too broad because they don't know what the heck they're doing? Or is it intentional to create all this fear in the people who use federal government money for things? Because clearly it's intentional to create fear in federal employees. Like, that's obviously a program that is clear, sharply well-defined and underway right now. And so is it also designed to create fear in people who are federal grantees and loanees? I don't know.
I kind of think they screwed up, but I also think it doesn't really matter because it has all of those effects. And just the, it was just kind of breathtaking to think. And it's illegal, which we should get to.
Yeah, but yeah. False choice also, yeah. By the way. Like, it can be both. It has the benefit of being both. I mean, I think this is, so we can put this under the heading of shock and awe. We can put this under the larger project of, modus operandi of move fast and break stuff. In other words, Trump was the one who said, I'm not going to vet nominees. I'll just pick them, throw them out there. And in the maelstrom, if they make it through, great. If they